I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KPCR. Thanks for listening. On today's show, I'll speak with comedian Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo is a regular panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz show. He's performed stand-up comedy for many years.
Christmas time, everyone's been talking about that. You go out Christmas shopping, you've been out battling the mall yet? Go out, have fun. That's why people get upset, because they don't know how to have fun when they shop. You know what I like to do? I like to get up really early and go to the mall and get that perfect parking spot, and then all day long I pretend to leave.
My interview with comedian Alonzo Bowden is coming up next on Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez, right after the NPR newscast. This is Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is comedian and actor Alonzo Bowden. He was the winner on the TV show Last Comic Standing in Season 3. He would later go on to be a judge on the show, but there's a big difference from standing on the stage being judged to sitting in the chair judging the comedic contestant. Tell me about that experience.
Oh, it was fantastic. Last Comic, I call it my introduction to America.
Okay.
Because although I had been doing comedy for 10 years, I'd been, you know, working in clubs and hustling, and now I was on national TV. So that was a great experience. And, of course, the money didn't hurt. You know, that's always nice when you get a big, fat check, and then you write a big, fat check to Uncle Sam. But that's another story. Taxes are paid. Then being a judge, that was when I realized how big the contest was, because the way it worked, the eliminations were every Tuesday, and every Tuesday it would come on and one comic would drop out of the competition. So when I was doing it, all I thought about was surviving to the next Tuesday. I didn't think about the other comics or how many people tried out. Then when I was a judge and we literally went around the world looking for contestants for season 5, you know, I realized there were literally thousands of people trying out, you know, I guess when you total it. And then I was like, wow, I did pretty good.
You didn't realize it until then that you did pretty good?
I mean, it felt good, but I just mean I didn't realize the enormity of the competition.
Yeah.
Because I would only see the contestants in the particular contest I was in. So, like, at my initial audition, I saw the contestants from L.A. And then my next round, I saw the contestants who made it from the various cities, L.A., Chicago, New York, Miami, etc., who had, you know, got to that round. Then when I got to Vegas, which was the final 10 to get in the house, I just saw the 20 that made it that far. So it was kind of an elimination every week.
Right.
And I would only see the people. So I never saw the people, like, you know, 500 people tried out in Minneapolis.
Oh.
But I didn't see them. I only saw the 5 that made it from Minneapolis to New York. So it wasn't until I was a judge that I realized the enormity of it. When you're in the midst of it, for me, it was just a matter of, oh, I got to do great this week. You know, I just really
stay alive
beyond surviving the next week.
Right, right. Did your career change immediately? You said you'd been in it for a long time. You've been doing it for 10 years. Did it change immediately after being on the show or after winning?
Absolutely, after being on the show. Things became so... I became so busy, and everything became so much bigger. The audiences were bigger. The show opportunities, I got to do shows that I wouldn't have done before in theaters. That was when I did my first Tonight Show, and I did the round of all these late-night TV shows. And, yeah, it was immediate. It was, as Last Comic Standing was wrapping up, my agent was like, okay, you're going to be busy until next year.
Nice. Nice. And so
the girl I was dating, she actually asked if she could get a surrogate boyfriend, if she could go on dates on weekends, because I was just never home.
Right.
I was traveling every week.
I'm a fan of Jay Leno. How was that experience, and did you talk with him? Did you make it to the couch?
Oh, absolutely. Jay was fantastic. You know, we're still friends now, and I do his car show called Leno's Garage.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Of all the late-night hosts, the big difference with Jay was when you get to the show and you go to the green room, you're, you know, getting ready a couple hours before the show, he would actually come in and introduce himself. And I mean, I had met him before, but he came in and he talked about what the show was going to be like. He wanted to know what your jokes were so he wouldn't step on any of your jokes when
nice.
He was doing his monologue or when he was talking to you. He was fantastic.
I love hearing those stories. How did you fall into comedy? Did your friends always tell you, man, you're funny, guy, you should be a comedian, or did you plan to do it all along?
Not at all. I wasn't the class clown. I was the guy who sat in class, and then the teacher would say something, and I would crack a joke to the guy next to me, and then he would bust out laughing and get in trouble, and I'd just sit there like, what? I didn't say anything. I could always maintain a straight face, so I was that guy. The way I got into comedy, my first career was in aerospace. I built and repaired airplanes, and I started training new mechanics. I became an instructor, and I just had more fun making them laugh than I did talking about, you know, the nuts and bolts and rivets and et cetera, putting together an airplane. I was going to get laid off, and I took this comedy writing class because I wanted to see if I could do it, and I did my first 5 minutes. And I was absolutely hooked, and I just never looked back after that.
Were you hooked because you loved hearing the laughter, or were you hooked because you loved delivering the lines?
I think delivering the line. I think I've always loved the creativity of it. I mean, the laughs were great, and actually, my first show, the graduation show in that class, when the people laughed, like, I didn't know what to do, you know, because it takes people time to laugh.
Right.
So I'm standing up there, and they're laughing, and it was like, teacher never went over this. What do? I'm just standing here, you know. You kind of learn to absorb it. But the creativity to this day is always my favorite thing. My favorite joke is whatever my newest one that I'm working on is.
Well, let me ask about that. Where do you come up with the material? What do you like to include in your stand-up?
Any and everything. Things I see, funny moments. I mean, obviously, the news and social commentary has become a big part of my act. It became much bigger after Last Comic Standing. Prior to Last Comic, I did a lot more personal stuff, and then over time, I found the world funnier than I found myself. So I would just talk more about, you know, what's in the news, what's going on, things like that.
And I'm guessing you have a lot of material right now with what's in our news and what's going on.
Well, the Trump phenomenon is very interesting in comedy. I am one of the comics who is kind of bored with Donald Trump.
I hear you.
Because it's the same thing all the time, right?
Yep,
He says something outrageous or he says something ridiculous, and then you make fun of it and move on. And listen, as a comic, you can't out-Trump Trump. No matter what ridiculous thing you're writing about, he's going to say something crazier. Telling us things that, you know, like we didn't already know. I mean, Donald Trump is unhinged. Really? Oh, we didn't know that. There's news. It's a balance, right? You have to acknowledge it, but you don't want to make the entire show about it.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's very real. And when you travel the country like I do, like most comics do, it's interesting because we are so divided as a country. You know, I used to tell people when Barack Obama was president, you know, I tell people here in L.A., like, you may not know it, but as much as we love Barack Obama, that's how much Alabama hates Barack Obama. And now that's flipped. Because as much as we can't stand Donald Trump, the more we can't stand him, the more they love him. And all he has to do is say fake news, and they believe it. Like, despite every proof and despite logic and despite what you're seeing in front of you, they're still like, oh, it's fake news. They're like, yeah, it's fake news. And, you know, obviously I'm going to talk a lot about what's going on in the political world. In my house, there's an ongoing feud between Siri and Alexa.
Oh.
I didn't think they wouldn't get along, but apparently two women living in the same house can be a problem. So I joke a little bit about that. And then, you know, it might just be whatever's going on in the moment. Something strikes me as funny that day, I'm going to hit on it, you know.
So you're a natural storyteller.
Yeah, I think so. I think I like telling stories, and I like to just point out my observations. I love when I have an observation that I haven't heard. I'm like, oh, you didn't notice that? So you will get some of the things that you don't get on Wait, because I am uncensored.
My guest is comedian Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo, have you ever bombed on stage? And I mean really bombed, or have you done okay?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't be a comic and not have bombed on occasion. I mean, at this point, it's more like a joke might not work or an idea might not work.
Sure.
But early in the career, absolutely. I remember I did a club. I grew up in New York. I grew up in Queens, and I did a club near my house, and I bombed so bad that they didn't just boo me off stage. They booed me out of the club onto the sidewalk.
Oh, my. And you still wanted to go back and get more?
Yeah, you got to get up again. That's the only cure for that is get back on the horse.
Wow.
Do it again. And fortunately, I think when you're new, I know when I was new, when I was a young comic, I didn't know enough to give up. I didn't know enough to say that doesn't work. I was just like, oh, I got to try it again. Yeah, it hurts in the moment, but the minute you get back on stage and get another laugh, you're okay.
You've performed all over the world. Is that kind of tough, or is funny funny regardless what stage you're on?
The more I do international stuff, the more I travel, the more you find out that people are so much more alike than they are different.
Huh.
You know, they speak a different language, they worship in a different religion, but I have been from Pakistan to Israel to Japan to Australia, Ireland, you know, anywhere they speak English, I've performed.
Wow.
Singapore. And you know what? People, they want to go to work and have a good job. They want to take care of their family. They want a few luxuries or maybe a vacation. And they want their boss to get off their back.
Right.
If you know how to say my boss is a jerk in six languages, you can make friends all over the world.
Look at that. I'll have to remember that one. You've also performed for military troops. How are they as an audience?
Oh, my God, the best. That is one of the most gratifying things that I get to do. And there is such a mutual appreciation. Obviously, we as comics appreciate not just the work the military does. You don't realize the sacrifice until you go, especially when they're in the Middle East, where it's a completely different culture. And, like, at the end of the day, they can't even have a beer because alcohol is illegal in this particular country or that particular country, things like that.
Right.
We appreciate what they do. They appreciate us bringing a taste of home, breaking up the monotony. You know, a lot of people in the Army, they describe it as Groundhog Day because they do the same thing every day. That's their job, and there's a lot of repetition. So we get to come in and break that up and change that, and they appreciate it. Yeah, the military shows are fantastic. Also, I've been exposed to things that I would never have seen otherwise. You know, I've been on the deck of aircraft carriers and naval destroyers, and I've been in Black Hawk helicopters flying around from base to base. And, you know, all those experiences, you can't get them any other way. So I love the military. The other thing that they love is we're allowed to make fun of officers. They can never do that.
Right.
Usually the officers are cool to do a few jokes about them and let the enlisted blow off some steam and get some laughs. Military shows are just awesome.
Well, thank you for doing that for them as well. What came first? I know you do some acting. I'm guessing the comedy came first, or is whatever gig that could pay the bills?
Listen, anyone who calls me an actor is just being ridiculously generous, and I appreciate
okay.
it. I have been in some movies and TV shows. I have a big run of playing the bouncer at a club. I don't know if that's typecasting or what, but I do that quite a bit. For those listening on the radio, I'm 6'3", about 250, so they kind of see bouncer when I walk in. Although this season I stretched, I wasn't the bouncer at a club. I was a high school teacher at detention. I've done acting classes. I learned enough about acting to really know what great actors are, and I don't think people realize how difficult it is, what they see on screen, how difficult it is for the actor to do it, what they create. And what fascinates me about acting is the emotion that they can create, you know, basically on cue, and then they do it repeatedly because you have, you know, five takes of the same scene.
Right.
So it's like, okay, we need you to cry again. Comedy is my love. Stand-up's my first love, and it'll always be the principal thing I do. But I love when I get a chance to be on screen in a movie or a TV show.
Now, I saw a photo of you and Don Rickles. Did you just take the photo, or did you actually get to talk with him for a few minutes?
That was one of my greatest moments in comedy. Don Rickles hosted one of the galas, which are the major shows at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. which is the biggest comedy festival in the world.
Oh.
And sitting backstage in the green room, Don Rickles started making fun of me. And as a comic, there was no greater honor than Don Rickles sitting there making fun of you. You know, Don was just like, you can see. What first joke he said, oh, your name's Alonzo. Oh, that's good. Gave you a white guy's name. That way the cops won't think you did it. Anyway, it just went downhill from there. And you can't do anything but laugh and take it. I'm so glad I got it on video. And
really?
Yeah, that's an amazing moment as a comic to have Don Rickles make fun of you.
The fact that you have a story to tell of Don Rickles. He was a great comedian. A little snarky, but a great comedian.
Yeah, I've been lucky in that I met quite a few legends and got to work with them. You know, I got to work with Phyllis Diller,
really?
Rodney Dangerfield,
wow.
George Carlin. Yeah, I the only person that I never met or got to work with that I would have loved to was Richard Pryor. I've been lucky in that respect that I've met and worked with a lot of comedy legends and just about every superstar you can name.
That's awesome. Since this is public radio, I have to ask you about being a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Do you prepare before appearing on the show, or do you fly by the seat of your pants?
Absolutely by the seat of my pants. I don't think there's a way to prepare because we never know what the questions are going to be or what they're going to talk about that particular time. And there's always one question which I will have no idea what Peter's talking about. The last time that happened, it was in the lightning round at the end of the show where they hit you with quick questions,
yep.
And it was like blank in Florida. Florida? Are you kidding? That could be anything. I love doing the show, and we each have different approaches to doing it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a bit of a news junkie. I like to read the news. I like to know what's going on. I just show up and hopefully get through. And the last two appearances, I've won two in a row, which is amazing because I generally win once every 2 years.
You're giving Paula Poundstone a run for her money, huh?
Yeah, not even close. I love Paula. Paula is the queen of the show. And if you ever have any doubt, when they introduce the three of us, you just listen to the applause and cheering when they say Paula's name, and you're like, okay, I've got some work to do. But she's fantastic. She's great and very funny. And we have a great time doing the show. Peter is one of the smartest people I've ever met. And just, you know, sometimes you see someone and they're like the perfect host for the show they do. I couldn't imagine anyone doing that show better than Peter does it.
I'm speaking with comedian Alonzo Bowden, who has appeared for a few years now on the NPR News quiz, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And just speaking about Peter, I agree with you. I think he's a great host. Were you a public radio listener before you were a panelist? Did you even know of the show?
Okay, I'm going to get in trouble here.
Yes,
I listened to public radio. No, I didn't listen to Wait, Wait. As a matter of fact, I would sometimes listen to Car Talk and then turn it off. It was like, wow, I guess I should have listened for one more show.
Let me just ask you about Peter Sagal, the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Do you have one inside story? You did mention that he's a pretty smart guy. He's written a couple of books on history. Any inside story about Peter that you can share?
You know what Peter and I have in common that a lot of people don't know about Peter? He loves motorcycles. Peter loves riding motorcycles, and he does these great motorcycle tours of Europe. He'll fly to Europe and rent a bike and ride around and see different countries, which is something I haven't done yet. I've ridden some in other countries, but I haven't done the tours. So I think that's something that people don't know about Peter Sagal.
Well, thank you very much.
I broke my wrist on a motorcycle. And see, the thing, having an accident on a motorcycle is like no other accident, because you don't get any sympathy on a motorcycle. You know, as soon as people hear you got hurt on a motorcycle, they feel obligated to tell you the worst motorcycle accident they ever heard. And they're like, oh, you was on a motorcycle? Oh, my friend got eaten by a bear on a motorcycle. He was just riding and the bear jumped on the back and he thought that was cool. I'm riding a bear. And then the bear bit his head off, you know. And then they always give you advice, so you shouldn't ride anymore.
As you mentioned, you're a motorcycle enthusiast, as is Peter, but you're also a car enthusiast. You've hosted some TV shows, including 101 Cars You Must Drive, America's Worst Driver. Do you like being a host?
Oh, I love it. I love it. That was something that I was kind of, an innate talent I wasn't aware of. The people who did 101 Cars You Must Drive, they came to me and they asked me if I wanted to host
Nice.
And it went great. And it was. I asked them, I said, how'd you find me? They said, well, we actually just Googled comedian and car.
Oh.
And they said, of course, Jay Leno came up first, and we said, no, we can't afford him. Then Adam Carolla came up, and they said, no, we can't afford him. But then your name came up, and they said, hey, we can afford him. I'm telling you, that's how I got the gig. And well, it was a fun show.
Very good. What's your dream at this point in your career?
You know, I'd love to host a topical current events type show. If we were to combine The Daily Show with a talk show, that's what I would love to be the host of.
Well, I hope your dreams come true. Alonzo, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Alonzo. Comedian Alonzo Bowden is one of the rotating panelists on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You can also see his stand-up comedy schedule at our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. After the break, and in celebration of the holidays, I'll share another favorite Christmas song. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. The holidays are upon us, and so is the Christmas music. I asked our staff to share their favorite Christmas song with me and why it's their favorite. KVCR's Morning Edition host, Ken Vincent.
It's not one song, it's the whole album Ella Fitzgerald's Christmas. I remember I was maybe 10 or 11 years old. My mother bought that album for my grandmother. Mom loved Ella Fitzgerald, and Nana was very religious, and I think my mom knew that her mother would appreciate Ella Fitzgerald's really amazingly spiritual treatment of familiar Christmas standards. Of course, my mom had the album, too, and I remember making it my own personal tradition to play the entire Ella Fitzgerald's Christmas album every Christmas that I spent at my parents' or my grandparents' place up until I was in my 20s. And the album is now sort of a classic. Even in recent Christmases, I'll be in a store or a medical office and hear a track from that album and feel so nostalgic.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away.
That's our show. If you'd like to hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. Share your favorite Christmas song and why it's your favorite when you're at our website. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including David Fleming, Sharina Wadd, Sean Houlihan, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Ethan Bortnick provides our theme music. Thanks for listening. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.